From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. Those of you who have spent time in Korea will be very familiar with the topic of this week's episode. We are going to be talking about yellow dust and air pollution. Every spring, Korea is inundated with yellow dust to the point where Korean weather reports include air pollution predictions for the day. But our guest today has written a paper for KEI, and he says the problem is far more complicated than it might seem. So we are here today with Dr. Matthew Shapiro. He is an associate professor of political science at the Illinois Institute of Technology and an East Asia Institute fellow. And as I mentioned, he wrote a paper for KEI about the yellow dust and air pollution issue titled Transboundary Air Pollution in Northeast Asia, The Political Economy of Yellow Dust, Particulate Matter, and PM2.5. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
So I'm going to ask a very fundamental, simple question to start off, and then we'll get into some of the more complicated issues that you include in your paper. What exactly is yellow dust, particulate matter, and PM2.5?
Sure. Well, as you said, anyone that's living in Northeast Asia is pretty exposed to these three things. Yellow dust is Mongolian desert dust, northern China desert dust that gets picked up and blown around. Typically, it happens in the spring. It happens to a lesser degree in the fall, but especially in the spring. So right around now, there's lots of yellow dust. It makes the sky yellow. It becomes so thick, and it's got some severe health consequences. In terms of PM2.5 and particulate matter is a general term for any sort of airborne pollution. It comes in different sizes. So particulate matter is simply airborne particulates. PM2.5 is particulate matter of such a small size, 2.5 microns or less, that it gets deeply embedded in the lungs. It actually can enter the bloodstream, according to the science I know about this. So PM2.5, particulate matter, yellow dust, they all address a Northeast Asian problem. It's not unique to Northeast Asia, but its problem is pretty severe in Northeast Asia because when the yellow dust or particulate matter or PM2.5, when they move around, when they're airborne, especially in the heavily industrialized areas of China, they pick up the pollution that is airborne at the same time and carry that much farther than it otherwise could have gone.
I'm familiar with this narrative, having lived in Korea for 2 years as well. But the thought that this is a Chinese problem and it's China's fault, it's coming over from China. And what you're saying in your paper here, which I thought was very interesting, is it's not so simple. So how did you look into that issue?
Right. It is. It's easy to point the finger. And what I wanted to do was address a common theme in environmental economics known as the pollution haven hypothesis. Basically, what this argues is that as firms are looking for places to set up their production processes, they, in part of their calculus, are looking at places where the environmental standards are looser. Thus saving costs of having expensive pollution-reducing technologies and dumping stuff in the river or whatever. So in terms of blaming China, the pollution haven hypothesis comes in because if, in fact, there is that kind of occurrence and if the polluters, the foreign polluters in China are, let's say, from Korea, then the finger that's being pointed at China can actually be pointed at oneself, at Korea. What is, in fact, happening and what the research shows, based on others' research that I've aggregated and then through a collection of foreign direct investment statistics, is that Korea, among other countries, is a high foreign and direct investor in China, and that pollution flows are increasing from China to Korea. It's an association. It's not causal, but I would say with better data, it can be established that it is causal.
So today we had a presentation where you talked to our audience here at KEI about your paper and about your findings. And that's one thing that seemed to come up a lot, was that we need more data and we need more monitoring to really understand this issue. So what data is being collected, and what do you think needs to be done to better understand what's going on?
Yeah, that's a great question. In the paper, I cite some of the most recent efforts to try and understand this. It's about identifying the unit of analysis. Is it the city? Is it the country? Is it the province? How do they capture this information? How do they get this data? Are they going to satellite data? Are they hoping to set up monitors offshore that catch it as it passes through? All of these are very technical questions that have to do with atmospheric science. One of the most compelling papers that I cite is an energy economics paper from 2015 by Jiang and others, Firm Ownership, China's Exported Related Emissions and the Responsibility Issue. And what they do in this paper is use a completely novel measurement. I believe it is at the neighborhood level, if I'm not mistaken. And based on those data, they are able to attribute foreign investments in China with exported pollution flows out of China. The other data that would be helpful, and this is ultimately how I wrap up the paper, is I would argue first targeting the largest polluters, the largest firms, that is. And as part of the Chinese regulatory process, or as part of the trade deals that are written up between Korea and China, require these foreign firms based in China, investing in China, to either at cost or through some sort of subsidy, set up a pollution monitoring system that can track accurately what they're emitting. So when you get that kind of information, and if it's at the state level, if it's collected at the state level, then you're going to have all the data you need to measure exactly how much pollution is being produced. It's not some sort of self-measured measure. It's something that is standardized and used across all firms.
So one other thing that I thought was really interesting that you do in this paper is, as we mentioned, this is a very salient issue for Koreans, and you look into the public opinion, or more the media coverage of this issue. So that was something that I found really fascinating. You looked at a lot of different terms and how they're reporting on this. So can you give us a little bit of an idea of what the Korean media are saying about this issue?
Sure. The issue is essentially divided up into two parts. One part is focusing on particulate matter. One part is focusing on the yellow dust. And what I found, and it's only a 5-month survey of Korean media, is that the particulate matter discussions increase significantly in the December months. The yellow dust related discussions increase significantly in the spring, especially in March. And then I had to stop collecting data to finish writing the paper. And I used only the data from October through March last year and this year. So it's a preliminary study in that sense. And I don't know anyone that's done it. The important part of what I noticed when you break down those two kinds of discussions like that is that the increase in the December months was largely attributed to China. And by attributed, I mean they mentioned China in the articles that focused on particulate matter. In the yellow dust months in the springtime, there is very little discussion about China. So how we can interpret this is that the particulate matter discussions are pointing the finger at China. The yellow dust media reports are saying it's anthropogenic. That's an assumption, but that's what I think we can accurately assume. Essentially, it's a problem that is being described as something that needs to be dealt with by the Korean public versus something that can be mitigated. So you can adapt It's a climate change related narrative. You can adapt to the problem or you can mitigate the problem. What's going on in the Korean media is that it's largely one of focusing on preventative measures. The Korean Medical Association has clearly had an influence by getting their reports up, by focusing on having the Korean public use masks, by very expensive humidifiers and purifiers that can detect any kind of pollution. They're thousands of dollars. The preventative measure can't be asking people to drop $2,000 for the latest technology. One, a technology that probably needs to be updated every couple of years, or it's got very expensive filters or something like that. This is the narrative that's being conveyed in the media and one that the public is seemingly buying into.
So this is one thing that I asked you this at our event, but I thought that you had a really interesting answer to kind of tie together our previous two questions here. So the Korean public is aware that yellow dust is an issue. They know that they need to wear masks or, you know, potentially buy these expensive humidifiers and things like that. But they don't necessarily have a kind of, they haven't been necessarily motivated to look at the core issue and look at the FDI that their companies are doing. So the answer that you had during the event was basically because of the lack of data that we were just talking about, that we can't point a finger somewhere directly. So it's really hard to motivate the public to do something about the issue itself. Did I summarize that well?
That's right.
So what can be done there, I guess, if the public is not necessarily motivated to specifically, or they can't be motivated to specifically address the core of this problem, what can we do in the short term?
So in the international political economy, the public opinion is a difficult variable to tie in, but it's one that has to be connected, especially when you have these shared problems, these commons problems that are involving multiple populations. So what can be done? The focus right now has to be one on regulation, and it has to be one that is currently occurring through the efforts of the Chinese environmental minister, who is not turning away, he's not shirking from his duties to enforce the environmental regulations that are in place. It's a battle between top-down enforcement and local efforts to get the economy going in China. And that model seems to be challenged by the current leadership in Beijing, which is very encouraging. What we can do is ask for those connections to be established. It's a complex issue for even people like us to understand and wrap our heads around. The notion that Koreans are contributing to a problem abroad that comes back in transboundary air pollution, it's a very complex issue. And it's one that many Koreans, through nationalistic fervor or simply economic nationalism, say it's not something we have to deal with. We had a comment in the Q&A, for example, that identified Korea as being just a small part of the problem. So why should Korea attempt to fix it if it's so many, there are so many different moving parts? I can't disagree with that. Why? Well, then let's talk about the health costs. And they're severe. The numbers are that across East Asia in 2020, there are going to be as many as a million cases of increased mortality from air pollution. There are very serious health consequences in Korea. I put up a figure that looks at respiratory deaths and tobacco consumption that are negatively related. So clearly there are other factors involved, and one of them certainly has to be air pollution, part of which is air pollution originating in China. So this is, by framing it as a health issue, something that I would say the general public, if they're able to make the connection between FDI flows and air pollution generation, the general public would get immediately behind.
Right. I agree with that. Absolutely. I think that it's the health concerns are something they're concerned about, something that all of us are concerned about with increasing pollution. And so I totally agree that if that connection can be made, that there can be a mobilization there. I want to ask you about also you've talked about some of the cooperation on the more government or intergovernment levels. There have been several meetings, several organizations that have been kind of founded to deal with environmental issues. And you point to two specifically in Northeast Asia that you think are able to deal with this issue of the yellow dust and the air pollution. So can you tell me a little bit more about those two organizations? What have they been doing? What should they be doing to address this issue?
Well, the first one is EANET, that is focused primarily on setting up emissions measurement tools throughout East Asia. They have been grouping all of the East Asian countries, not just in Northeast Asia, to collect this data, to assemble it, to track air pollution. It is pretty preliminary. So the downside with EANET is that they're not as dedicated in targeting specific sources or looking to identify specific sources. Like I would argue in my paper that we have to put a monitor right next to the smokestack of a large factory, of a large foreign factory for that matter. The other group that I mentioned, the other institution is called the Tripartite Environmental Ministers Meeting, TEM, and that occurs every year, typically in the spring. They just had one in Japan, and it is ongoing. It's a meeting where they get together and talk about shared problems. Air pollution, water pollution through shared bodies of air and water are the common topics, and it's from 2001 something that was identified among the ministers at that time. Yellow dust and air pollution was identified as something that needed to be addressed. What has occurred has been negligible. Now, people that would argue that anything is better than nothing, I would have to agree with, but it really hasn't advanced the cause as much. So bookmarking this issue is much less effective than sitting down and trying to identify the issue itself. And that's what I'm doing in this paper, much more than I would say the tripartite environmental ministers are doing at their meeting. So are these efforts of little consequence? No. They help keep the issue on the table. They are being discussed in the media. The tripartite environmental ministers meeting talking about yellow dust might cause Koreans to say, well, it's not just our problem. It's something that others are doing. So we should be focusing on this too. But just like the yellow dust, it's an annual event. It comes, it goes, and then attention drops. And so this is part of the other confounding factors to this whole discussion. It's not ever present. Air pollution is something that Chinese understand. They live with it all the time. There's that video that everyone has to watch beneath the dome. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's mind-blowing. I mean, it's journalistic and borderline sensationalistic, but it's pretty accurate in terms of conveying how bad the problem is in China. There's one scene of a kid saying, I don't know what a blue sky looks like, you know, because he has never seen a blue sky. This is the extreme, but it's something that everyone deals with for most of the time in the urban areas and the areas where transportation is used a lot and where the industrial sectors are. In Korea, air pollution has improved. Energy production processes have changed. Everything is a lot cleaner. So the cyclical nature of the problem in Korea is not helping. Keep the public's attention on this, keeping the policymakers' attention on this, and the fact that policymakers are living in an electoral cycle where their electoral incentives drive their decisions doesn't help things also. There are so many parts to the story by combining media effects and public opinion, but hopefully I've at least touched on a number of these important issues that need to be addressed, not only in this study, but in any study that attempts to look at the international political economy of air pollution. Hopefully, I'm presenting a model that can be applied to any study of international political economy that involves transboundary pollution flows, air, water, whatever.
Okay, great. That sounds like a great place to wrap up. I want to ask you, though, is there anything else that you are either unable to include in this paper or something that you would want to continue to look at in terms of this issue in the future?
One of the issues that I was raised on when I began studying Northeast Asia is the development model. The development model, beginning with Park Chung-hee, and now we, over time, I'm speaking about Korea only right now, over time it's transitioned from export to import to innovation, and now we're in this green R&D, green innovation, sort of creative economy sort of thing. That's the Korean case, but there are analogs in Japan and in China. What Northeast Asia can be in terms of those development models is crucial today, especially given the importance of China, the growth of China, the pollution that it generates, and the fact that China will not be the last industrial giant in the world. India is coming. In an ideal world, Africa will follow, or Latin America. These are models that need to be established. And then when the next polluting giant comes to be, there will be a case of how to deal with these pollution problems and these shared commons problems that are always going to be present in some form.
Okay, great. Dr. Shapiro, thank you so much for joining us today for this really important discussion that I think is generally overlooked outside of the region itself. So I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
That's all for this episode of Korean Context. As always, thank you so much for joining us for this great conversation. Please remember to subscribe on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. And do remember that you can go back and listen to our archive of episodes at keia.podbean.com. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll be back again next week with another great episode.